Thanks, Tom. I'm not going to use the T word in my presentation because I don't know how to pronounce it. And I just, you know, we've based a lot of our work on geomorphology and geomorphic relationships, and Alfred, your soil mixer that you've come up with really messes up geomorphic relationships in these vineyards, and it makes it hard for us soil geomorph types to figure out what's going on out there. Toby has set the scene for this. I'm going to build on what he's talked about, and his concluding slide there about, you know, how good the model is, that's sort of the sales pitch for the model. And now I want to talk about the reality of the model. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about, it was pretty good, but I'll show you where we need to learn more. Toby talked about the Lodi District, and that's roughly shown here with the outline. This is old school technology, actually taken with a camera, if you know what those are. And just to orient the group here, I'm very familiar with the region, but I'm sure not all of you are. But you've seen Sacramento, Lodi, and Stockton on Toby's presentation. And I just want to show you the complexity of the geology and what we're trying to deal with in terms of developing this model. So Toby talked about the Sierra Nevada shown over here. The red stuff is granitic, granodiorite to diorite. The andesitic lahar material that came from Nevada sometime back during the Miocene and Pliocene is this yellow stuff. So it probably came down rivers like the Toutle River in Mount St. Helens. Anyway, that's the idea, and fill up valleys. And there are little bits of it down here in the valley, that kind of the yellow stuff. So that's the metavolcanic. The blue stuff is the metasedimentary and metavolcanic rocks that are the oldest rocks of the Sierra, probably Paleozoic, 300 million, 400 million years in age, and into which the red stuff was injected during subduction. So that's the stuff that's now been exposed by stripping. There's a metamorphic belt in here. These are mostly the metavolcanic rocks. These are old crustal materials, oceanic crust that were crammed onto the coast of California during subduction about the time that the granitic batholith was in place. So that was about 70 million years ago. And then the alluvial materials down here in the valley are the yellow stuff. Okay, so this is the American River for reference. Here's the Sacramento River coming down in black. And this is the San Joaquin River coming up from the south. So this is the confluence over here, the delta or the estuary. Now the three main drains that dump alluvium into our system are the Cosumnes River, which comes from the north. It's a relatively small drainage basin, and as you can see, it dissects landscapes that are dominated now by granitic and andesitic material. So granitic and andesitic, picks up a little bit of the metasedimentary stuff, the old stuff, the metamorphic belt, and then actually dumps down here into the McCollumy River, which is a bigger river, goes to the crest of the Sierra, has deep canyons that thoroughly invade the granitic terrain. It's a much larger watershed, relatively speaking, than the Cosumnes. So it carries dominantly granitic materials, of course, a bunch of other stuff to confuse us pedologists, thrown in for good measure. And it dumps down into the Sacramento River just outside of Lodi. And then lastly, the Calaveras River, named for the jumping frog contest. No, wait, it was the other way around, I think. Okay, and so that's the Calaveras River, a relatively small drainage basin, and I've, of course, artfully drawn the upper reaches so that it only drains the metasedimentary rocks, which is pretty much true. And so it really doesn't have much of a signature of the granitic terrain. And that's, as we'll see, the basis for one of our soil regions. And as Toby mentioned, we have done a lot of digging, and most of this by hand. And Hideyomi Minoshima, who's working on his PhD, is the heavy lifter in this one. And he really deserves most of the credit. We have 110 auger profiles and 35 pedons that we've dug and described. So there's a boatload of data that Toby alluded to, and we're just getting into the fun part of interpreting it. And those seven little dots represent seven of those 150 observations. So as you can see, we're generalizing widely here at this point, and I hope you'll help me understand the story and believe what I'm telling you based on those 7 points. All right, so there's the picture that Toby showed, those six regions. We started off with five, but as we got more sophisticated, we realized that we needed more than five. And so I'm not going to go into the details again, but I'm going to come back and use that as a touchstone for each of the regions to see how well the model works. Okay, and so that's my question. Well, how well does the region model work? And I'd like to say it's perfect, but clearly we have already seen that that's not the case. We'll talk briefly about some of our methods. Much digging and soil description, that's of course where it all starts. And you always have to wonder, well, where do you dig? How do you decide where to dig? And we use the soil survey information to help stratify the world into manageable bits. But even still, as good as the soil survey is, we find that sometimes where we dig, it's not like what the soil mapper said it was. And that adds to the intrigue and challenges the model to some degree. We do ammonium acetate extractional cations, the classic sort of soil fertility thing, one molar pH 7. We do our method of measuring potassium fixation is a method that was developed by Masha Marashkina, who did her PhD in our lab a few years ago, a one-hour incubation with 2 millimolar potassium chloride followed by an extraction with 1 molar ammonium chloride. So it's a fairly fast K fixation measure. It probably doesn't measure really all of the K fixation potential, but it's something that is reasonably quick, and it seems to work, believe it or not, and that's why we've stuck with it. At least it works for our purposes. Of course, we do particle size distribution and follow that with fractionation because we're going to do mineralogy, X-ray diffraction of clay and silt fractions using cation exchange, saturation methods, potassium and magnesium, followed by glycerol solvation with the magnesium, samples, and then heating at 350 and 550 K to look at the movement of the 2-to-1 phyllosilicates. And then some grain count mineralogy, and I'll tell you, my eyes are getting too old for this stuff, but because I was the driver of the microscope on these grain counts. So we count the very fine sand fraction from the fractionation, mount the grains in refractive index oil, and count 300 to 400 grains per sample to try to get some idea of what the mineralogy of the sand fraction is. Okay, so now what I'm going to do, the next few minutes of fun here are going to step through the five regions, and I want to just show you the mineralogy that backs up the idea of where the potassium fixation occurs and how well our regional and landscape model kind of fits with the data. So region one, remember, fine textured alluvial basins. Okay, and here it is, X high, extractable K high, fix none. Okay, so it's simple codes here for you to remember. Lots of extractable K, but it shouldn't fix K. Okay, and the soils that we're picking on here are mapped as the Stockton clay map units, which are xeric epiaquids. So they're the verticils that that Toby talked about, kind of wet, but kind of dry. Okay, enough. So there's more data on here that I'm really going to talk about, but if you have questions about some of it, just shout out and I'll try to explain it. I want to draw your attention to the XK. So this is the extractable K by the ammonium acetate. Milligrams per kilogram, you know, divide by 400 and you'll get milliequivalents per kilogram, a CEC value. But so anyway, the idea that this is high K because it's supposed to be dominated by smectite, pretty easy to get the potassium out of there. And that's true in the AP horizon. And as Toby talked about, you know, we're not sure about why we get so much extractable K other than they're fertilizing with potassium. That's one of the clues. But below that, we would have expected maybe more potassium being extracted from these soils. And in terms of what high, medium, and low is, Alfred, we're still working on trying to figure out what those numbers even mean to us. But I would say the reality is high in the surface and kind of moderate in the subsurface based on those numbers. Okay? But if we look at the K fixation, you know, when we got the numbers back, we said, hey, Hideo, go do that again because we couldn't believe that there was so much K fixation. Because in the upper part, not much, but in the lower part, those are, from our point of view, high K fixation numbers. All right, so we're going to pick on two of these horizons now, just the BT1 and the C horizon, and we're going to look at the mineralogy of those materials and see if we can understand why we get the K fixation and mostly the K fixation values that we get. All right, so hold on to your horses here because we're going to show two different depths, 13 to 38 centimeters on the left, and we're going to show clay, silt, and the very fine sand fraction. And then on the right, in soil region one, at 60 to 100 centimeters, that's the sea horizon, clay, silt, and sand. So a lot of information here, but I want you to focus on a couple of things in the circles. We notice that in this the second horizon, There's with our glycerol treatment in the upper graph here, there's some expansion to 18 nanometers or 18 angstroms, 1.8 nanometers, which is SMECTITE. But there's a little peak that remains here at about 1.4 nanometers. That's how we differentiate SMECTITE from vermiculite. And when heated to 550, that peak disappears, so it's not chloride. Okay, well, that's as much detail as I'm going to get into how we interpret these X-ray patterns. But the conclusion is that there's SMECTITE and there's vermiculite in the clay fraction. So that begins to help us understand why we got some K fixation. We didn't think we would have vermiculite in these soils, but we do. And when we look at the silt fraction, we oftentimes think of this as a clay fraction phenomenon, and Masha Marashkin has showed that it's a clay, silt, and very fine sand fraction phenomenon. We see vermiculite in the silt fraction, so presumably contributing to K fixation potential down here. We have that remnant peak. And even in the very fine sand fraction, we find little bits of either hydrobiotite or vermiculite, and it's very difficult for me to differentiate those in grain counts. But anyway, I counted 400 of those things, and there were about 3% of the sand grains in the very fine sand fraction that were vermiculite. So we have cation fixers or potassium fixers in the clay fraction. And we have even more of it in the deeper horizons. So we had some K fixation here, but we had a lot of K fixation in those subsurface horizons. There's the vermiculite. There's some of the mica that could be the precursor for that vermiculite. There's a lot of vermiculite, at least an intense peak in the silt fraction, which surprised us. And there's quite a bit of biotite and weathered vermiculite here in the sand fraction. So the conclusion, it seemed to work for the clayey smectitic horizons, any of the soils that had it. But as Toby pointed out, some of these underlying horizons probably are older deposits of soil region 2 or soil region 3 materials that are now buried by these clayey deposits. And so what we're learning is that our soil region 1 is more complicated than we first thought, and we're going to have to go do a little bit more work and try to sort out where those smectitic deposits are. Okay, soil region 2. We'll pick up the pace here a bit. This, remember, our floodplains and lower relief alluvial fans, they're not supposed to have much extractable K, but they're supposed to fix quite a bit of K. And we're going to focus now on the Cosumnes River versus the Calaveras River. So that's that granitic versus the non-granitic. They're mapped as Columbia soils, which are aquixero flue vents. All right, so hey, looks pretty good on the Cosumnes River. Not much extractable potassium, so in that 50 to 100 milligrams per kilogram range. And other than in the AP horizon, which we think is potassium management related, there's a strong K fixation potential, and so it seems to match the model pretty well. But I want you to note that there's a lot of K fixation going on, but not a lot of clay in the profile. So this alerts us to the fact that we think that the sand and silt fractions are big important players in this K model. We're going to look at the AP2 horizon and the C3. So we're going to focus on both of these horizons that have quite a bit of K fixation potential. Okay, in the clay fraction, expansion to around maybe 18 angstroms here, possibly a smectitic signature in the clay fraction, but remember there's only 6% clay. So that's not a big part of the story, but look down here in the silt fraction, and this is vermiculite, 1.4 nanometer materials, and in the very fine sand fraction, about a quarter of the very fine sand fraction is biotite weathered to hydrobiotite, interstratified, or vermiculite. So you know, I think that's where a lot of the K fixation is occurring. We haven't measured the K fixation by the very fine sand fraction, but that may be something we will do. In the deeper horizons, similarly, some expansion in smectite, but it's only about 10% clay. Lot of vermiculite in the silt fraction. That's probably where the K fixation is coming from. And again, about one-fifth to a quarter of the sand grain, so this is a point count, not an area or volume count, is vermiculite and associated biotite. So these probably, the silt and the very fine sand fractions, are probably what's carrying the K fixation capacity in the soil. So I say, hey, model's okay. But it turns out we underpredict K fixation. We thought it should be moderate, but it's high. Okay, so we're going to have to rethink that part of the model. And Toby showed that with his data. He admitted that we were undershooting the K fixation. K, Okay, the Calaveras River, remember that drains the non-granitic terrain. The concepts here are the same, X mod fix none, mapped as packet haplozerols. Very high extractable K. Not much K fixation in the upper part, but a lot in the bottom part. So that soil region two, even though we segregated the Calaveras River from the Cosumnes, we still see quite a bit of K fixation in those bottom horizons. And we'll focus on those two horizons. Smectite in the upper, we see the expansion once again, but there's some vermiculite in the silt fraction in the upper horizons, and a little bit of biotite and vermiculite, about 5% in the very fine sand fractions. But the mineralogy looks quite different, trust me. I mean, the figures actually look quite a bit different. The feldspars here are much grubbier than we see. That's the technical term. They're more turbid. They're much more weathered here than we see in the granitic materials, and I think that's where the K is coming from. But we see some of these, a little bit of biotite still that could be fixing the K. Remember, that's the upper horizons, some K fixation. The real K fixation comes in the lower horizons, where we have a lot of vermiculite in the silt fraction and about the same amount in the very fine sand fraction. So I think what's happening here, once again, is that we have Calaveras alluvium in the upper part overlapping some granitic alluvium in the lower part. And so we have a complicated stratigraphic relationship that we don't understand yet, because we have only dug 150 holes and not more, which we'll need to do. So I say that the model is okay. You know, we said that this shouldn't fix as much K, but it's complicated by this stratigraphy of the overlapping McCollumy and Calaveras fans. And we don't understand that very well yet. Region 3 are those rolling dissected fans. They're supposed to have relatively low extractable K, but fix a lot of K, because this is where vermiculite lives. And indeed, relatively low K extractable K, and among the highest K fixation values that we see. So we're feeling spunky at this point and confident that we've finally hit the nail on the head. And we'll focus on the mineralogy of the AP and the BT4 horizons. In the clay fraction, there's actually starting to be quite a bit of kaolinite in here now, because we're getting onto older landscapes. There's still some remnant micas in here, and really not much in terms of vermiculite in the clay fraction. But we're still seeing this common theme of the importance that the silt fraction plays in maintaining vermiculite and in the sand, very fine sand fraction. So about 8% still of vermiculite and its precursor biotite in that sand fraction. So I think we want to continue to focus our attention, at least our petalogic attention, on the silt and very fine sand fractions as the keys to what's doing the K fixation, not the clay fraction. And at the greater depths, still smectite here, not too much in terms of vermiculite, but the story is the same for the deeper horizons, with vermiculite in the silt and biotite and vermiculite in the sand fractions. So I would say that the model is okay here. It works pretty well. Toby pointed out some nuances in the southern part around the Calaveras River that I will not talk about, because it still complicates the model a bit. But in general, I think soil region 4 works, or soil region 3 works. Soil region 4, it turns out to be, it's a petalogic nightmare. This is the dissected landscape where we have old rolling dissected fans. This is a transect of soils across 3 or 4 map units. And then their elevations plotted as a function of horizontal distance. So we have about 50 meters of relief in the landscape, an undulating landform. We should not fix much, have extractable K that's moderate, and we shouldn't fix. Okay, but I'm going to show you two soils very quickly, one from a summit of that sort of rolling catena, and then one from a backslope. Okay, there's the summit. Hey, and it works pretty good. It's a little bit of extractable K, and no K fixation, and okay, that's great. But then we go to the back slope and on this complicated landscape, and all bets are off, because we don't understand exactly what's going on in that landscape. There's moderate extractable K, but we have K fixation in those soils. We'll look at those horizons. There's the summit with kaolinite, just as the model predicted. There's a little bit of mica in the silt fraction, and this could be muscovite. We haven't differentiated that. And just a tiny bit of biotite and its weathering product vermiculite in the subsoil. So that part of the model worked pretty well, but the backslope was an eye-opener. We see a little bit of smectite in the clay fraction, but there's vermiculite in the silt fraction, and 20% of the very fine sand fraction consists of vermiculite. That's where the cave fixation is coming from. These must be granitic sediments in the landscape somewhere that have not been weathered as much as these have. Our conclusion, it's complicated. We need to work on it because we don't understand how the stratigraphy works. And region 5, finally, the dissected volcanic uplands, high fix or high extractable, fix none. These are mapped as pents soils. They're ultracapitalxerols. High extractable K, just like the model predicts, because of the potassium feldspars, probably some potassium in some of the hornblende as well. And K fixation, none. Focus on those two horizons. Smectite in the clay fraction, or some smeary things that may reflect the glassy nature of the andesite, not very crystalline materials in the clay fraction, but certainly no vermiculite. Maybe a little bit of vermiculite in the silt fraction, but not very informative X-ray patterns. And a lot of dark pyroxenes, but not much biotite in that very fine sand fraction. So mineralogically, it looks like soil 5 is consistent with what we see both in the surface horizon. In the subsurface horizon, their smectite expands to 1.8 nanometers. No clear signs of vermiculite in the silt fraction, and just a little bit of biotite in that very fine sand fraction. So the conclusion, model okay. In summary, I think our model predicts regions 3 and 5 well. Okay, so we won't focus as much attention on those in the future. Region 2 is reasonably well predicted when we separate granitic from non-granitic. That is 2A from 2B. But it's complicated, in particular in 2B, because of the onlapping of those different kinds of sediments. So complicated by stratigraphy. Fortunately, region 1 is not extensive. They don't plant a lot of grapes in region 1. And it's complicated by the stratigraphy. But because it's of such a small area, we'll probably focus less attention on that as we try to learn more. Region 4 is the most complicated. It's the most challenging pedologically. We need to understand stratigraphy and hill slope processes, and the practical take-home message, and I learned this from Carrie Steenworth, is that you always have to have a practical take-home message, is region 4 is where new vineyards are going in this region. That's where all the new vineyard development is occurring, and so if we can help understand the relationship between K supply and vineyard development, then we've done the growers some good. Thanks.